C4. Number 16B.
If we accept the textbook as a textbook for our life, a book of life, then I guess we could, with some authority, say, what makes us a channel for revelation? And the answer would be, well, acquaint yourself as thoroughly as possible with a chapter on prayer, with the chapter, go through the chapter on animal magnetism. Go through that fire, that purifying fire of animal magnetism. Do the best you can in your human life, in marriage, to be constructive in whatever you do. Make the best of every situation, whatever that situation is. Use the best qualities, the spiritual qualities you can, and stick to that the best you can. See through spiritualism, that I think is then the main point. See and understand that the spiritual is the only real, that there is nothing in mysticism, that human beliefs and the realm of human beliefs and the world image of human belief is not real, is not the reality of our life. Then animal magnetism, handle animal magnetism day in and day out from the point of view of grace, not by fighting with arguments against animal magnetism, but by handling evil from the point of view of grace, from the synonymous terms, then I think within us is a clarity and a purity that is able to receive a new inspiration. You know, the same question that Mrs. Eddy asked here, why have I been chosen? What was it that made me be the discoverer of Christianity? She must have asked herself that many times. And in the same way, John Dolio asked himself always, why has it been my lot really to be used to see the signs of Christian science? Why not somebody else? Because at his time, you know, it was different in the movement, and now we had those terrific big characters in the movement. Quite a number of really outstanding teachers and lecturers and visionaries like Bignall Young, or I don't want to go into names, but that was a really a period where if you picked up the journal, you were very keen to look up, did Cook write an article, did Bignall Young write an article, did so-and-so write an article, huh? And so the question naturally was, also for John Dolio, why did I see it? What was it that made me be the channel for it? And his answer he gave us always was that he said, because I handled animal magnetism every day. That was his answer. And the way he did it was always just as we were going over the positive sense of that chapter, namely always from the synonymous term. When you have one presentation of it in Christian Science Practice. If you take that book on Christian Science Practice, right at the end he has quite a long treatise over many, many pages of handling animal magnetism. And you see it's all from the point of view of the seven synonymous terms. That's the way he handled it. He didn't handle it like most of the others, through arguments, through statements, through metaphysics. He handled it through science. Therefore, I feel the exercise you have made in the last few days in this class, in the evening, sitting back and beginning to see that actually what is happening, that God is all, what is all is mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth and love. If only these synonymous terms go on, you were contemplating all for yourself, that therefore only mind and mind's ideas are going on. You were asking yourself, what is mind and mind's ideas, what is spirit and spirit's ideas, soul and soul ideas, and then to see that this is the only thing that goes on, nothing else is going on. You have handled animal magnetism. That was treatment of animal magnetism. And so many of you told me the next morning what a beautiful evening they had, what a terrific night they had. Hardly could go asleep because of the magnitude of what they have seen and what they have felt, feeling, golly, if I go on that way for another half year, I don't know what will happen to me. That was the reaction, you know. You see what you have done. You have handled animal magnetism, and what happens, that you suddenly feel that only the activity of the synonymous term are alive within you, are at work within you, strengthening you, giving confidence, hope, seeing a way out of situation that seems to be hopeless. This is therefore the way, the method. And what was revealed to Mrs. Eddy at that point? At that point, God was revealed to her in its science. At that point, she takes up really that revelation that came to her. She wouldn't accept as a faith healing. She wouldn't accept that this is a miracle. She challenged that miracle and said, if that has happened, then there must be a law behind it, there must be a science behind it, and not just a miracle that happens once in a blue full moon, huh? Or what is your wording? Huh? Yeah, blue moon, yes, that better, in the blue moon. She challenged, you see, she challenged that very incident and said, I want to know what you are. You are not just an undefined thing. If it can happen once, it must be a fact, it must be a scientific fact, and if it's a scientific fact, I can understand it, and I can analyze it, and I can see what is at work. The true attitude of a scientist, not at all the attitude of a religionist, not at all. If you read the history of the saints, for instance, there were saints all over the place, they are by the thousands, all over the place, especially in the Catholic Church, you have these marvels going on right now, you know, people that are stigmatized, that don't have to eat year in and year out, and they are happy and blooming, they don't have to eat, things like that, miraculous. They take it as a grace of God and a gift of grace, and that's that. That's a religious attitude. Thank you, God Almighty, I'm chosen, that's fine, that's wonderful, I go on, I try to be obedient and try to be pure and try to be holy, so let's go on that way. Not Mrs. Eddy. She challenged. She said, yes, I know, these things happen, these things have always happened, but I must know the science of this healing. Think of that. Think of that. That challenge, to challenge God, huh? Say, now tell me what you are. Like Jacob, he said, I don't let you go until you bless me. Tell me what you are. And so she began to see what God is. And began to see that God is mind, is spirit, is soul, principle. That's what she explains here now. The nature of God as mind. Doing what? We come now to the first subject, mind doing what? The revelation of mind, translating mortal mind out of itself back into the metaphysics of the one mind. That's what she began to see. That idea poured in into her mind as the divine mind doing what in her consciousness? Showing that mortal mind is a solecism in language. That mortal mind isn't a mind. That the human mind isn't a mind at all. That it is only a semantic problem, a false rendering of mind, because mind can never be mortal. Immortal mind can never be mortal. So there is no mortal mind. And that enormous vision, that breaking in of that terrific light, that all is mind, that all is mind, and that there is no mortal mind. This is a terrific discovery. Up to this point, they were building up mortal mind. Right from mesmer up through hypnotism, suggestion, auto-suggestion, autogenic training, discovery of the human mind, discovery of the unconscious mind, the discovery of the conscious mind, discovery of psychology, discovery of parapsychology, discovery of how can this escape my brain? Medicine, psychosomatic medicine. How can one escape that? Psychosomatic medicine, you see? All that was building up mind, small m. And here she came and said, you can build it up as much as you can, but it's always nothing. It is not mind. The mind you investigate is not mind. That needed a terrific courage to see that. And setting in the place of mortal mind the proposition that there is one infinite divine mind. Then the next subject, she tells us, is that what she saw there was actually that God is spirit, and that spirit really translates its opposite, the belief in matter, out of itself back into the one spirit. Think that she stated that in the last century, in the 19th century, at the pinnacle of materialism. At the pinnacle of materialism. She stated that at the end of the century, and right afterwards that whole sense of materialism began to crumble. Began to crumble right in the year 1900 with the discovery of Planck and Madame Curie, and it crumbled and crumbled until today, as we have seen a few days ago, that physicists feel it's asking a wrong question, is matter material? Can you see? And that Planck said, behind matter is actually only spirit, and that spirit is God, 100 years afterwards. The whole world begins to be awake to the fact that matter is not what we think it is, or what we thought it is, that there is no matter substance, that there are only laws of principles, and that constitutes reality. Here Mrs. Eddy was seeing that, and she said, but you know, you can only see that if you first learn the language of spirit. Here she speaks all about the language of spirit, that the language of spirit must take the place of material concepts, that the leaven of spirit must leaven our material concepts and leaven it until it is finally leavened, and that would lead us out of matter into spirit. So what leads us out of matter into spirit? Not by saying there is no matter, all is spirit. That doesn't do a trick. It is by getting to know that language of spirit. That language of spirit which is not American, which is not English, which is not German, which is not French. That language of spirit which is the tonality of the seven synonymous term. As you culture a new language, the tonality of the seven synonymous term, you learn the new language. God's language, God's own language, that which is giving us a sense of spirit, because in that new language you get the feeling that only the spiritual and the unspiritual ideas are real. If we do that, then we may not have much difficulty in going to the third subject and seeing what Mrs. Eddy presents here. Namely that soul translates the testimony of the physical senses back into spiritual ideas. Now she tackles physical sense, the testimony of the physical sense, and says, you know, they never really testify to truth, and gives quite a few examples how they are misleading, that we should not trust them, that the only trust we should put into spiritual sense, that sense which we have gained through the language of spirit. That language gives us then the definite sense of testimony of what is true, so that the physical testimony give place to the spiritual sense. Here we have those statements which we all know, that divine science rising above physical theories exclude matter, And then we have resolved things into thoughts. Things are resolved into thoughts. And replaces. Now we come to the replacing the objects of material sense with spiritual ideas. Now you can see how hopeless this is to start with soul here and say, I'm going to replace the object of sense with spiritual ideas. I have an object of sense, a table, so I translate it into a spiritual idea. I have an object of sense, say a streetcar, so I translate it into an idea. That was Kimball's period. Today we see this is not what is meant here, because she starts out from divine science and says, if you start out from divine science, you jolly well have at the place of objects, you have ideas. But you don't reason from object to ideas. You reason from the divine science to ideas, and these replace a universe of objects. So reasoning in the language of spirit, we always have that spiritual sense which tells us exactly what the universe looks like, what is going on in the universe, what we are. They tell us our identity. I don't have to translate my stomach into an idea, my heart into an idea, and my kidneys into an idea, my bones into an idea, my blood into an idea, my brain into an idea, as they did at that time. I jolly well take that whole thing in one go and see all that what the language of spirit sees is the testimony of the spiritual sense, and that testifies to ideas, and so ideas take the place of material objects. You don't translate each object into an idea. You have the whole flood of spirit flooding out ideas, and that's your universe, and it takes the place of the object's universe. Then he goes on to principle, and this is one of the strongest part in her whole textbook in regard to science, what science means. Here she is really an avant-garde. Do you say that also in English, an avant-garde? Yes, in science. She, writing in the time of highest materialism, and where science was only conceived in terms of measuring materially and seeing that science is what people are putting forward as hypotheses and as theorems and as theories, suddenly she brought in a complete different aspect. She said, all science is divine, no more human. All science is divine. Terrific. Only today, after 100 years, little by little, you hear this new idea shine through in the general discussion on science, that science must have a higher origin than the thinking of the scientist, that science must be something that is far above the scientist and must exist in being. She says science relates to mind, capital M, not matter. Practically no scientist will accept that. They say that it relates to mind, not matter. Science for them relates to matter. But here we have a new concept of science relating to the divine mind, the divine mind science. Mind science that calculates only in ideas, the elements, the digits, the divine digits, so to say, with which divine science calculates our ideas. She says that science alone can interpret God aright, or reality aright. But science, she means her science, not natural science. The term science properly understood, no scientist today would still accept that, not yet now. The term science properly understood refers only to the laws of God and his government of the universe. All the scientists will say, no, they refer to the laws of matter, or to psychological laws or biological laws, but always refers to something which has nothing to do with God and God's laws. But she feels that only that concept of science has the right to the name of science when it refers to God. And actually we can see the logic of it, because we say, God stands for the divine principle, that one principle that unites everything. Therefore, from that one principle has come the law, and from that law all the other laws, so that all laws build on the law of God. And for us it has become natural. I just want to bring this out because we talk about the signs, and the scientists talk that they have a science, that we are aware that their fundamental concept of science still diverges, still to a great deal, from our concept of science. Though there is a great convergence taking place, but they have not yet met. They have not yet met. And we still will have to look forward that the concept of science in the world will change and change still more. It has changed quite a lot. Over the last, I would say, only in my lifetime, or since my university years, within those 40 years, it has changed an enormous lot, within those 40 years. Or perhaps to say, alone in the last 10 years, it has changed a lot. So we can expect that the concept of science will still change further in the world. We should never be happy to see what the world says today, how they approach the subject which we approach. And if there is already some kind of agreement on convergence, we should always much more look at the trend that we can see over the last 100 years. What is the trend in the world? And extrapolate that, you know what I mean with extrapolate, the trend into the future and see where it leads to. Then we see much more how we may approach that time, perhaps in another 50 or 100 years, where we really can see that the world will accept divine science. Then we come to life, where we see that life translates a dead theology into a living, practical Christianity. Her great point was that science must be Christian, and that Christianity must be science, that there is no divergence between science and Christianity, and that actually theology should be that subject, that branch of science, that branch of Christian science, which would show that life and science are one. That science is a living science and not just a theoretical science, that it is a science of life, and actually the church, the religion, theology should teach that very science of life. That would be their field. Whereas psychology would be the science of soul, physics should be the science of spirit, but theology really should be the science of life. And she takes up this problem and says that the churches have not accepted this science of life. That's why they are dead, because that is the reason why they persecute every new idea. She asks that terrific question, must Christian science come through the Christian churches? And she says, this science has come already, but after the manner of God's appointing, but the churches seem not ready to receive it. This is the history of religion in general. Reading the history of religion in general, no matter which religion, you always have the same pattern. A new revelator, around him gathers a little crowd. Slowly, step by step, that crowd becomes bigger, it becomes a church, it becomes an organization, it has a hierarchy in it, and it is dead. And then it stays that way, and then slowly falls to pieces. Until there is another dissenter in that church, again, somebody who dissents, a mutation, who has a new paradigm, and so he becomes an outsider, he gathers a few around him, little by little they become more numerous, and then there is always the danger, it becomes an organization, it becomes dead, and that again falls to pieces. This is the history of every church. There is not one church that has been always that what Kuhn says mature science, that is constantly willing to evolve and evolve and evolve. Just doesn't seem to be possible. But that is an individual consciousness. Each one of us can say to himself, am I willing to mutate or not? Am I willing to accept the living, the sense of science or not? Then the last subject is the whole subject on medicine, which takes up the whole tone of truth. Here is shown that truth translates the so-called healing power of matter or of drugs back into the one remedy called truth. So here we have a great translation taking place again, a retranslation saying, showing that there is no remedy neither in the human mind, nor in the mortal mind, nor in matter. The only remedy there is truth itself. There is no truth in matter, no truth in mortal mind. So the only remedy, the only savior remedy, we could call solving power, the only problem-solving power is truth. If that problem is sickness, or if that problem is financial lack, or if that problem is a relationship that is broken, or whatever it is, it's always a problem, and the remedy is always truth, nothing else, not something outside of the seven synonymous terms. And in this way you can see that she has brought in really the science. Can you see? Every science relies first on thinking, on human thinking. Without human thinking you cannot have philosophy nor science. So she says, but human thinking must be retranslated into the one mind. Every science builds on matter. It has a matter universe. She retranslates it back into spirit. Every science says, I must see it testified. I must be able to measure it through the testimony of the physical senses. She retranslates that into the sense of soul, into spiritual sense. She says that the world says every science is a human science and therefore is built by people and therefore shows first a hypothesis, then the acknowledgement of that hypothesis, and it becomes science and it becomes acknowledged, and then there is a new paradigm and then so on and so on. But it's a humanly conceived form and method to present the being. She retranslates it into a new science, that science which is built on mind, spirit and soul. That's her science. If she can build her principle or her science on these first three, mind, spirit, soul, then she says, then I have not a dead science, then I have a theology, a science of life that is always new, always afresh. And that is problem solving. That's the science of truth.